Hello and welcome to Finsider Radio. I am MC Money, joined here by Certain the Creepy Soccer Dad and Hautstradamus, no longer Rosenhaus, because obviously the Dolphins did not select Josh Rosen in the 2018 NFL Draft, and it has been one hell of a week with the Miami Dolphins, dating back to last Thursday, going into Friday, going to Saturday with the NFL Draft. The Dolphins making several moves throughout the draft, and we're going to dive into every draft pick. We're going to talk very briefly about the undrafted free agents. We're going to touch on the Yahoo series that spent an entire year with the Miami Dolphins scouting department. Really, really good stuff in there. We're going to touch on that, and then we're going to talk about, finally, Akeem Spence and Bryce Petty, although we're probably only going to spend about 30 seconds on Bryce Petty because at the end of the day, he's the fourth quarterback on the roster right now and probably nothing more than a camp arm. But let's go right back to last Thursday, Houts and Certain. First of all, Baker Mayfield, the number one pick in the draft. We all loved Baker Mayfield. The Browns did a hell of a job keeping it quiet. Kudos to them. No one really knew who it was going to be until the pick was actually announced. Rumors, tons of rumors leading up to the actual draft said it was Sam Darnold. Then they reverted to Josh Allen. Then they moved to possibly, oh, maybe they're considering Saquon Barkley or Bradley Chubb at number one. And then as we were leading up to the final few days, Baker Mayfield's name came up. And no one really thought it was going to happen until Roger Goodell came up to the podium and said the Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield, quarterback, Oklahoma. Now, in the hours leading up to the draft, it leaked that that was, in fact, their pick, but still nobody knew for sure because ESPN had reported it, Josina Anderson, but then Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network came out several hours later and said, no, he's talked to GMs who know John Dorsey very well, of course, the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, and those GMs said that John Dorsey would not pick Baker Mayfield. So you had ESPN on one hand saying it was going to be Baker, NFL Network saying it was not going to be Baker Mayfield. That added to the suspense until we finally got a resolution there. In a way, Sutton and Houts, I'm glad that Baker Mayfield went to the Browns because the Jets, as we have found out since, it was not a smokescreen that they were going to pick Baker Mayfield. They were going to take him at number three. So one, he's out of our division. Two, he's not going to the Jets. Three, he's going to the Browns. But more importantly, let's say something crazy happened where the Jets decided, oh, at the last minute, they didn't want Baker Mayfield. And then he starts sliding down the boards a little bit and then maybe only gets picked up two or three slots before the Dolphins. Then it adds more heartbreak to it. It's almost like I compare it to losing a very close game by 3 points or with the final kick field goal to end the game and the Dolphins lose compared to a blowout. You don't feel good about a blowout, but you're not as pissed off about a blowout than you are a really close game. And then as the draft went on, the surprise there with Denzel Ward being picked at number four instead of Bradley Chubb, Sam Darnold going to the Jets, Bradley Chubb going to the Broncos, Roquan Smith, our boy, going to the Bears, and then the Dolphins finally landing on Minkah Fitzpatrick, who we'll touch on in just a few minutes. But your top 10 thoughts, Sutton and Houts, as you watch the draft unfold leading up to the Miami Dolphins pick?
Yeah, Baker was the number one quarterback for all three of us, I believe. So, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, the suspense was there, but it wasn't that surprising of a move. I was fairly happy that Buffalo invested in Josh Allen. Maybe I'll eat those words one of these days, but I didn't think he was a great prospect, and hopefully I'm right on all accounts there. Sam Darnold, I know we had talked to Dan Orlovsky on a show a couple months ago, and Sam Darnold was one of his favorites. But when I saw him play against Ohio State, I just had a bad feeling about his projection to the NFL. Whether that's fair or not, I don't think so. But just his lack of appreciating the football, turning over the football too many times, trying to do too much, and that Ohio State defense kind of gobbled him up. So I didn't like how he faced that Ohio State defense. So to have those two guys go to the Jets and Bills, I'm okay in that position. Like I said, maybe I'll eat those words, but I was happy that the Jets and Bills got those respective quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I completely agree with Kanata on Cleveland taking Baker Mayfield. He was the best quarterback in this draft by all of our accounts, and to see him go number one and not have to sit through the agony of him falling, perhaps maybe going to the Jets or Buffalo. I mean, it was great, and you kind of enjoyed seeing him. I don't want to say it's kind of like being a proud parent, but we all were pretty high on Baker Mayfield, and to see him go number one overall to be the best player drafted the highest player draft. And I mean, that was huge. And as someone came up on Twitter, they said, now we finally get to see Baker Mayfield and Jarvis Landry. Maybe it's not what we kind of expected or had hoped, but now we get to see him and Jarvis in Cleveland, and that Browns team's going to be pretty damn fun to watch. Another guy that kind of relieved me a little bit was when I saw that's not poor choice of words, but Mike McGlinchey going to San Francisco. I mean, I know Albright came on and told us that he was an option for the Dolphins at 11, and we all kind of just, I don't know about you guys, but I couldn't sleep that night. So to see him go before our pick and to not have to worry about him possibly being in the Dolphins pick at 11 was great. But overall, Sam Darnold, not a huge fan. Josh Allen, not a huge fan. So I'm not quite sure that the Dolphins have too much to be concerned about. And then when you got a guy like Roquan Smith, I know there are rumors that the Dolphins could have traded up for him. Whether or not that's true is anyone's guess. But the Dolphins got Minkah Fitzpatrick, who I think many of us believe were probably the best player that the Dolphins could get in this draft, to see a top five or even top five talent fall to the Dolphins at 11. That was huge, and I know we're all going to touch on that a bit more. But the NFL draft, it came and went so fast, and it was here and gone before we could even enjoy it. So I'm ready for the season to start, and let's talk about Minkah.
We were all waiting for the NFL draft to come. Then as the NFL draft approached, we all couldn't wait for it to be over just because of all the smoke that appeared over the past few days leading up to it. And then now that the NFL draft is over, like, all right, what do we do now? So the first round couldn't have worked out any better for the Miami Dolphins. Tons of smoke about them wanting Josh Rosen leading up to the draft. We still don't know that's true. I've been told, and I said this on our show, that I was told by people that I trust that Adam Gase was absolutely in love with Josh Rosen. And I think had Josh Rosen been there at 11, there would be some debate in that war room as to whether or not they should go there. And I think if Adam Gase had ultimately gotten his way, Josh Rosen would be a Miami Dolphin if he was there at 11. Now, some might say, and I know I heard this argument on Twitter afterwards, when I said the Dolphins still wanted to draft Josh Rosen, he just wasn't there for them. And some people said, well, all they had to do was move up one spot. But here's the thing about that, and I don't know why people aren't understanding this, but the Raiders were picking at number 10, and their first target, by all accounts, was Mike McGlinchey of Notre Dame, who Ben Albright dropped on our show last week that the Dolphins were very interested in him. So the 49ers pick him at number 9. The Raiders are picking at number 10, which ironically was because of the coin flip at the NFL Combine. They had the same exact tiebreakers going on there. The 49ers won the coin toss. They get the guy the Raiders wanted. So the Raiders then worked on, you know, getting their next guy and ultimately ended up being Colton Miller of UCLA offensive tackle. We had a second round grade on him. I think that was a terrible pick by the Raiders. But if they were purely reaching for offensive tackle there and they absolutely wanted Colton Miller or an offensive tackle and nothing else, because obviously there were plenty of good players still on the board there. But why would you not take the Cardinals compensation, right? From moving down from 10 to 15, because you know that that trade or that player is still going to be on the board. So Colton Miller is not getting drafted at 11. He's not getting drafted at 12. He's not getting drafted at 13. He's not getting drafted at 14. He's not getting drafted at 15. Hell, he's probably not getting drafted in the top 20. Okay. So the Raiders are saying, why would we take less compensation to move down one spot rather than taking the Cardinals, who ended up trading its number 15 pick, right? Swapping first, which is a given. But then they also get in their third round pick and fifth round pick. If the Miami Dolphins had to move up from 11 to 10 to get Josh Rosen, they'd probably only give up a fifth round pick. So when people say, oh, all the Dolphins had to do was move up one spot, that is not accurate, because the Raiders got more out of the deal with the Cardinals that dropped on the 15, knowing full well that Colton Miller would still be on the board, barring another crazy reach by another team. So all of that worked out very well for the Miami Dolphins. We won't ever know 100% sure. None of us will, unless we somehow get Adam Gase drunk one night in Miami and he spills all the secrets out, but I doubt that's ever going to happen. We'll never know. But to have a guy like Minkah Fitzpatrick on the board at 11, and on our show leading up to the draft in a few weeks, we talked extensively about Minkah Fitzpatrick, and we said that he and Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield were the top three players on the board. And we said that Minkah Fitzpatrick is probably going to be the Dolphins pick if he's there, because we all anticipated all the quarterbacks being off the board by that time, which ended up happening. So when you look at how the first round shaked out, Minkah Fitzpatrick is sitting right there. And not only Minkah Fitzpatrick is sitting right there, but Derwin James is sitting right there. And Tremaine Edmonds is sitting right there. And Leighton Van Der Esch is sitting right there. And some people were even saying Vita Vea. And let's throw him in there sitting right there. All of these players, and the Dolphins had their pick of the litter, and they go for Minkah Fitzpatrick, safety out of Alabama. And the Yahoo Sports, Pete Thamel, spent a year with the Miami Dolphins. And if you read it, part 9, Why Scouts Love Visiting Nick Saban in Alabama, you will understand why the Dolphins fell in love with Minkah Fitzpatrick. When one of their senior scouts visited Alabama this season, they were able to find everything that he was doing right. Okay, so if we pull up that article and we really look at what they're saying about him, and the scout's name, last name is Brockington, Ron Brockington, he was walking through the facility, and he noticed on the morning of a game, he noticed Fitzpatrick watching film by himself in the defensive back's room. According to the article, it says, it was an unusual and inspiring scene on the morning of a game. The image of Fitzpatrick struck Brockington as the junior already put on a suit, donned headphones to cut out distractions, and appeared locked in, seeking one final edge. Brockington took a picture on his iPhone and sent it to fellow National Scout Matt Winston and general manager Chris Greer with the caption, "Game Day Minkah is here watching the video." Two clapping hand emojis followed. The article goes on to say, for the Dolphins scouts and brass, catching Fitzpatrick in that impromptu moment of dedication reinforced what they'd seen on video, heard from the staff personnel and their background research. Brockington says, "I dropped the mic. I could not believe that. Top professionalism. I can go on and on." So it's clear, not only because of Minkah's playability, not only because of his ability to play all six positions in the secondary, not because of his ability to be that chess piece and move all around, and not because of his ability to cover tight ends, running backs, wide receivers, and everything else, but also because he fits perfectly, by all accounts, into the new Miami Dolphins culture that they're trying to build. I had Minkah Fitzpatrick rated number 8 overall, number 2 at his position based on my consensus board. I did have Derwin James ranked a little higher than him. In terms of how much, if we look at the position rankings, I had Minkah Fitzpatrick at an 8.5, Derwin James at an 8.53. So really it all came down to personal preference there for the Miami Dolphins. But Houts, what did you love most about selecting Minkah Fitzpatrick in the first round? And then Sutton, I want to get your kind of breakdown of Minkah as well.
Yeah, I was absolutely ecstatic. I mean, you're sitting there, the Raiders are on the clock, and you got Josh Rosen and Minkah Fitzpatrick. And part of me, as much as I wanted a quarterback, I was kind of hoping that something happened there, because I think Minkah Fitzpatrick all along was probably best for the Dolphins in 2018. I think he's best for this franchise moving forward. We know we have two strong safeties, Rashad Jones, TJ McDonald, similar skill sets. But like you said, what Minkah Fitzpatrick can do, he's a natural free safety. He can, you know, play on the outside, play in the nickel. He can come down in the box. He can be moved around as this chess piece that the Dolphins have never had. I mean, the closest we've come to having a player of Minkah Fitzpatrick's caliber is I think a few years back when we could have Earl Thomas and we traded back for Jared Odrick. I mean, that kind of haunted us for a couple years. And you touched on this guy. He's all about football. He goes out there. You said hours before the game, he's sitting there watching film. I know hundreds of people now have said on Twitter that he won a Thorpe Award for best defensive back and Benerick Award for best overall defender. And that's only been done by two other people, Charles Woodson and Patrick Peterson. So that's some hell of a company to be in. But I think Minkah Fitzpatrick, I know you touched on Derwin James a little bit, but I think Fitzpatrick's better for what the Dolphins wanted to do. He's better in coverage in both of the safeties that we currently have. And bringing him in allows, you know, TJ McDonald or Rashad Jones to kind of do what they do, freelance in the defense. Rashad Jones, he comes down the box. He's a heavy hitter. TJ McDonald's similar, might play some linebacker. But Minkah can be used to disguise coverage all over. And I think when all is said and done, I said it on Twitter, and I truly believe that if Minkah Fitzpatrick, he keeps up that work ethic that he's kind of got from Nick Saban, who some consider Minkah Fitzpatrick his son, if he can continue to have that work ethic and go out there and put as much time and effort into the NFL game as he did in college football, which I think he will, I think this is going to be one of the best draft picks that we've had. I mean, we're all in our 30s. I think this is going to be one of the best draft picks we've ever seen the Dolphins have if he can live up to the expectations that I think he can. He's just – the perfect player for this team. And we always say defense wins championships. You look at what Jacksonville did. They went out there and they almost made the Super Bowl with freaking Blake Bortles. You can't tell me Ryan Tannehill's not 100 times better than Blake Bortles. This defense, they go out there, Minkah Fitzpatrick changes everything. And I think these Miami Dolphins are going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I think Minkah Fitzpatrick's going to be one of the best players for many years to come.
Pouts, by the way, I was curious, what was the shot that you took in your Minkah baby Twitter video? What was the shot after you predicted Minkah was going to be the pick?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't hard to predict, but since I kind of look like Captain Morgan, I had some rum. So I'm not really all for all that soda, so I just quick did a shot of Captain. So
Sailor, that looked more like Sailor Jerry or Lady Bly.
I think you were gone. You were gone after that one.
Oh, yeah. There were many shots and beer prior to that pick, so I was ecstatic.
I know, you're talking to the guy. Before you get going, son. Yeah, I was just going to say you were passed out on your sofa.
I was going to say you're talking to the guy that fell asleep 15 minutes after the pick.
Yeah, and I was actually out with Jake Mendel at Buffalo Wild Wings. I think some other fans joined us as well out there. So we took a shot right before the Dolphins pick. We had some beers. I was buzzed after two sips of my beer and then totally drunk by the end of the first beer. So it was a great night for Matthew Cannata.
You were probably drunk just sniffing the alcohol before you even drank it. So
yes, that too.
I'm sure Jake had to babysit you in a major way. Yeah. But anyway, back to Minkah. I mean, as you guys have said, what he does is unlocks the strengths of other players too. So we're going to be able to use TJ and Rashad in better ways than we were able to last year because Minkah has a skill set that they don't, and that's the center field piece. Yes, he's a capable blitzer. He's a great tackler. He can play in the box as well. But he is much better in space and has better range than the other two safeties that we have right now. And I think he's going – that ability alone, just the center fielder, being able to get to far sidelines, be able to challenge post routes when he's covering a boundary. So to have that kind of flexibility opens up a lot of doors for Matt Burke and what he's going to call on defense. So we're going to see hopefully a little bit more creativity in the nickel package. We'll be able to hopefully stop opponents from getting a third and 27 like we seem to do every single game. So Minkah's going to help in a lot of different ways just in the different things that he can do. Houts mentioned that he can cover the slot. He can blitz. And like I said, he can cover the middle of the field. So to be able to add that to the defense – we had mentioned, yes, Derwin James was a very respected talent and had a pretty even, I think, platform with Minkah across the board in terms of who was better. But I think Minkah just fit better with what we needed. And so I think that's the route that we went. And obviously the Dolphins had Minkah higher in their plans as well. So to have this guy, this caliber play, you know, on a major stage, play in major ball games, to be a leader, have all those intangibles come into the locker room as well. You're starting to see this culture rebuild, and to be able to infuse it with talent and to have value in the pick in terms of draft capital, to have all those things kind of align, it's a really good feeling as a Dolphins fan, as weird as it is to see some of the ridiculous takes by some of the national media about what we lack direction and who's going to play quarterback and all that kind of stuff. You know what? Let them talk. Like, we always seem to do better with lower expectations anyway. So let's get that chip on our shoulder and have the us against the world mentality, and maybe that'll take us somewhere. But I absolutely think we made the right pick.
Minkah Fitzpatrick played 13 snaps as a perimeter corner in 2017 at Alabama, the position that some say will hold the most value for him at the NFL level, but I think the Dolphins do plan to play him as safety. He made 38 solo tackles in 2017, 23 of which were defensive stops, as he operated largely from the slot and around the line of scrimmage. Last year, he had a PFF grade of 84.8, and he wasn't beaten for a reception longer than 31 yards in 2017. On 61 targets, he routed an NFL passer rating of 83.5, but that same stat was just 37.8 the season before. So Minkah Fitzpatrick was a tremendous pick. I love Derwin James. I love Minkah just as much. So for what the Dolphins got there at 11, absolute stud, absolute superstar. Can he be Jalen Ramsey? And that is the biggest question, and we will see how that plays out as we head into rookie mini camp, which starts next week, as we head into training camp, and then, of course, preseason and the regular season. Pick number two, Dallas Goedert, tight end, is on the board for the Miami Dolphins. He's dropping. Everyone's getting excited. Everyone's saying, Dallas Goedert, Dallas Goedert, Dallas Goedert, and the Dolphins get to the podium, and they picked Mike Gesicki from Penn State University. And Mike Gesicki is a tremendous athlete. He is a physical freak of nature. You watch his highlight reel. And Houts, I'm going to throw this right to you because you posted several clips of him and you couldn't contain your excitement about what Gesicki was doing on the field.
Yeah, I was beyond excited. I think we touched on him a bit when we talked about tight ends. He was kind of someone that we looked towards the mid rounds, and well, there he went in the second round. I know there are rumors that New Orleans might have taken him in the first, that the Patriots are enamored by him and could have taken him there in the second, but the Dolphins ultimately got him in. I'm a Buckeyes fan, but I live in Penn State country, and I've heard about Gesicki for quite some time. I know he has McSorley as his quarterback, who I do not think is that good, but, I mean, what you see from Gesicki is just – he's the Jimmy Graham mold. I know everyone always touches on. It's almost like the Ryan Tannehill wide receiver thing, that Gesicki was a former volleyball player, and he has those ups, and – I mean, he's just an athlete. We talked about his combine measurables. I mean, some of those things, 4.5, 440, 22 on the bench press, 41.5 vertical inch jump, 129 broad jump, three cone, 6.76 seconds. I mean, the guy just completely tore up the combine, and you see it on tape. You see this quick athlete who reminds us. I mean, he is. He's the Jimmy Graham type. He can't block. He doesn't really fit into that blocking type, which is why the Dolphins went out there and got Durham Smythe. But at the end of the day, I mean, Gesicki, he's going to be Ryan Tannehill's best friend. You lose Jarvis Landry. You need that guy in the middle of the field, the kind of a security blanket. And I think what we're going to see from Gesicki is everything that we've kind of wanted from a tight end over the past, I don't know, man. It's been 10 years. It seems like forever since the Dolphins had a legit tight end who can go out there and make plays. And, I mean, Gesicki's he's going to be able to create mismatches on the outside. He should be a huge red zone target. And I'm a huge fantasy football player. I enjoy it a lot, and I think I'm going to target the shit out of him this year. I don't know. That's homerism. It is what it is, but I think Mike Gesicki in Miami with Ryan Tannehill this year, that's going to be a tandem, and I'm often wrong. I've been wrong before, and I'll be wrong 100 more times, but I think what he brings to this offense is everything that this team needs, and it's going to open things out on the outside, and I'm ecstatic for that pick. But you're right, Dallas Goedert, we all were on that. I was sitting there posting a video with my daughter, hoping that that was going to be the pick. I was getting ready to send that shit on to Twitter, and then it comes out to Mike Gesicki, and I thought about it, and I'm like, you know what? That makes complete sense. He's exactly what Adam Gase wants, and he's everything the Dolphins need.
Yeah, but I think you covered pretty much everything. The one thing that you didn't mention was the red zone, and I think that's the one thing that he's going to help us the most, because if you look across our wide receiver landscape right now, we have some shorter wide receivers with the exception of Devontae Parker, and we don't know how available Devontae is going to be and how many touchdowns he's going to be able to get. So to have someone like Mike Gesicki in the red zone for us is a huge component to how we're going to be able to score points this year, whether it be actually going to him or him being a decoy of some kind. So I think that's going to be a huge staple of the red zone offense, is finding a way to get Mike Gesicki involved. But just overall, big picture, I've done some research on the opening drives of 2017, and what I've found is we're not very good at getting the ball in the middle of the field in our opening drive. But we have thrown interceptions, and we cannot run the ball in the middle either. So running and passing, we're both poor in the middle of the field, for whatever reason. And what we're going to see, hopefully, with Mike Gesicki is to be able to get down the seam and be able to create some plays down the field in the middle. And that's one of Ryan Tannehill's strengths, in my opinion, is throwing those intermediate passes over the middle. He's hopefully going to lock in with Mike Gesicki early. Hopefully they're outside right now running routes on the beach or whatever. All romantic, like under the moonlight. I hope that they can create that chemistry to get the ball in the middle of the field, because that's going to be able to help us get off to leads. And that's not something we've been able to do for the last several years, is to start off games with leads and let our defense play with their ears pinned back. And hopefully we're able to get out to some leads this year and have our defense be able to be a little bit more aggressive. And that's, again, where Minka's going to come in, hope create some turnovers. And before you know it, maybe we're up 10-0 in the first quarter and we don't know what to do with ourselves. But Mike Gesicki is really going to help in the middle of the field and help this offense be more diverse.
So Mike Gesicki for me was ranked number 3 at his position on my consensus board. Dallas Goedert was number 1 with a grade of 8.39. Hayden Hurst, who was picked by the Ravens and picked number 25 in the first round, was graded out at 7.88. And Mike Gesicki was graded out at 7.87. So those two very close. So when you look at what Adam Gase likes, and the Yahoo article stated this perfectly clear, and what was interesting about the Dolphins scouting department, and I'm sure a lot of other scouting departments do this too, but they would send throughout the season Mike Tannenbaum, Chris Greer, and Adam Gase one-liners about all the players that they were being scouted. And that helped the coaching staff and the scouting department at the top keep tabs on every player that has come through the system thus far. And so Gesicki's one-liner was this: good athlete that has good hands and body control can make plays down the middle of the field and in the red zone high-pointing the ball, can be a mismatch guy, needs development as a blocker. So that's why his grade was a little lower than Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert can block. He's not a tremendous blocker, but he can block, and he can catch as well. Gesicki is your glorified slot receiver, one hell of a slot receiver that's a glorified in terms of size and everything else, but he is going to create mismatches all over the field. And when you really think about it, it's just a new way the tight ends now are in the NFL. Jason Witten just retired just yesterday, and he was that blocking tight end who caught the occasional pass in the middle of the field when they found the soft spot in zone coverages. You look at other guys like Travis Kelce, Rob Gronkowski. You look at guys like Zach Ertz that just open up the entire field because of their tremendous playmaking ability. That is Mike Gesicki. He is not going to be the blocker, and the Dolphins are able to offset that with the selection of Durham Smythe, the tight end from Notre Dame. And Durham Smythe, his one-liner for the Miami Dolphins scouting department was this: is a good-sized wide tight end that has very good instincts as a blocker and as a route runner. Good to find the soft spot in zone coverage and is a chain mover that can make tough catches all over the field and will compete as a blocker and is a smart player. So people have compared him to Anthony Fasano. Listen, if Durham Smythe is Anthony Fasano, I will take that all day, especially as a late fourth-round pick. Gesicki is going to be a nightmare for opposing defenses. Some say that tight ends struggle in their first year. I say that's mainly for blocking tight ends in terms of being the complete package because there's so many different protections they have to pick up. If they tell Mike Gesicki to just go out there and catch the football, he's going to have no problem kicking it off the ground from week one. Now, this also brings me to my next point. We need to be careful not to overthink things next year as we head into the draft process. When the picks are made, we're like, oh my God, that's absolutely right. Why didn't we see this the entire time? And yes, Minka was that pick for us, and we knew that going into the draft. But a guy like Mike Gesicki, that's right in front of our face. We know Adam Gase likes to pass the ball. We know he likes to create mismatches. Why were we all thinking Dallas Goedert? Just because that was the group speak that was being thrown around, that's because he was the name of the rumor mill. Nobody was linking Gesicki to Miami. And what's most interesting about Gesicki is the Patriots picking right after the Dolphins in that second round traded out. So there were rumors that they wanted Gesicki. But the Dolphins got him. Let's hope that he is a nightmare for opposing defenses for a year to come. Round 3, Jerome Baker. Here's the Dolphins one-liner. Him before I jump into you, Sutton. And I did not like this pick, but let's talk about it. Athletic linebacker that has good straight line speed and good cup, has good instincts, but is inconsistent to stack and shed in the box, has ability to match up in man coverage, and has explosiveness to blitz. That is the Miami Dolphins scouting department one-liner on Baker. Sutton, what were your thoughts?
Just one more quick comment on Gesicki. Houts had mentioned his background in volleyball. Houts also an accomplished basketball player, so you always like those tight ends that have basketball skills that understand more nuanced body position, be able to get those jump balls. So it's really just going to come full effect in the red zone. But going to Jerome Baker, I had talked about him in our linebacker preview on Finsider Radio before the draft. And he was one of the mid-round guys that I was intrigued by. And okay, Ohio State linebackers, I'm sorry, I know I'm a homer, but it's the new linebacker. Would you not agree, Houts? our linebackers that we turn out are pro ready. And Jerome Baker may be on the smaller side compared to some of his Ohio State predecessors, but he's going to be more of the Will linebacker that we've been looking for anyway. And this is the type of linebacker I've been harping on all offseason, is the guy with range and pass coverage skills. We don't necessarily need the blitzing outside linebacker type, strong outside linebacker. We are going to be playing a lot of nickel position. So if you look at the snap counts from last year, you're going to find that two linebackers are going to play the Lions' share of the snaps. So Jerome Baker, yes, he's a third-round draft pick, but he's not going to come in and assume a huge amount of responsibility initially. If someone is projecting that right now, I would have to politely disagree with that. But I think where he is going to come into effect is he's going to be quality depth at offensive linebacker, and he's going to be able to help this nickel coverage tremendously, because that's where his skill set is his range. And that's something that we've been lacking. It's going to help get Kiko off the field, so we can hopefully have Kiko more in a two-down role. So like I had mentioned last year, two linebackers got the lion's share of the snaps. Hopefully that's a different trend in 2018. Hopefully we're seeing Raekwon McMillan get the lion's share of the snaps, but then you're seeing, you know, Kiko sprinkled in, Jerome Baker sprinkled in. Hopefully Stephon Anthony can step up and get some more snaps there. So hopefully we have a more versatile linebacker group than we have in years past. And because of the versatility, so maybe it's not one individual player that's really standing out in that unit, but the way that they play together because they have complementary skill sets, I think that's the recipe for success with this linebacker group, and Jerome Baker is going to add to that.
Yeah, so, and you touched on it, Ohio State, they seem to be breeding linebackers down there, and I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan, like Kanata said. I mean, we're all just fans of the game. We kind of study prospects here and there. Maybe there were some players that I would have rather have had in the third round, but then when you go and watch the tape, I mean, you touched on it. You say he's a bit undersized. I mean, when you look at it, he's almost the exact same size as Roquan Smith, who we all loved. I mean, I think he's 6 or 7 pounds lighter. So that's what a all-you-can-eat buffet night at Chinese restaurant. I mean, the guy, he's rangy, like you said, instinctive. His coverage skills are something that this defense currently does not have. And ironically enough, his best season came in 2016 alongside of, you guessed it, Raekwon McMillan. And the Dolphins are getting back next season. So, I mean, sure, we can sit here as fans and say, okay, I would rather have this player, maybe this guy. But the Dolphins, they do this for a living. Those scouts go out there, as you saw in that Yahoo Sports article. This is their living. And they saw Jerome Baker. You see a fast linebacker who can pretty much do it all. I mean, you can see him blitzing on tape. You can see him dropping back in coverage. He seems to be instinctive in the run, in the pass game. He's going to do things that neither of these guys – I mean, I love Raekwon McMillan, but I think Jerome Baker could be a better coverage linebacker. I think he's going to take some of those snaps away from some of those other guys. I know you touched on it a bit. Dolphins playing a lot of two linebacker sets. It's going to be interesting to see how T.J. McDonald and Rashad Jones play into that middle of the field. But, I mean, Jerome Baker, he might not come in and, you know, light the world on fire, but he's going to have his role this season, and I think he's going to be a starter, like you said, at will. And just I'm excited to see him next to Raekwon McMillan. I think maybe the Dolphins, as much as it pains me to say it, I think Kiko's best season was there in the middle, so I think they got to kind of try to figure out what to do with Raekwon, maybe move him out to strong side, maybe switch him and Jerome Baker occasionally. But at the end of the day, I mean, we went into this draft, linebacker, tight end, those were two of our biggest needs. And, I mean, whether or not you like the Jerome Baker pick, what he does is everything that we kind of had hoped would have been the pick if we would have taken a Roquan Smith or a Tremaine Edmonds or a Leighton Vander Esch, if some people out there wanted him, Rashawn Evans. I mean, Jerome Baker's a hell of an athlete. He's a hell of a football player, and I think in Matt Burke's defense, he's going to be a hell of a talent, and the Dolphins' defense definitely got better in this season's draft.
When that pick was made for Jerome Baker, I was not happy, and Fred Warner went a few picks before Jerome Baker there. But I had a 5.91 grade on Jerome Baker. I had him ranked number 188 overall when he was picked at number 73. I had him ranked 17th at his position. When he was drafted, I had about 7 to 10 guys who were ranked ahead of him. When you look at the package, though, even Malik Jefferson went a few spots after him. And then you had Oren Burks go a few spots after him. You know, all guys that I had rated higher than him. Dorian O'Daniel from Clemson. But then you look at their one-liner and you look at possibly what they want to do with Jerome Baker. And then you say, okay, this makes sense too. Because like you both said, he can cover the tight ends. He can cover the running backs. He can even cover a slot receiver, according to the NFL Network, who has watched plenty of film on him and have done plenty of reports. And Ohio State, that is a football factory. He's reunited with his former teammate, Raekwon McMillan, in Miami. And you said it, son, he's not going to be a huge contributor day one. He is going to lean in, develop. He's going to be in certain situations on the field, obvious passing situations for sure. Third down, third and longs, second and longs. That's going to be his niche. And he's fast as all hell. He's going to be a great special teams player. And so, again, when you look at what the Dolphins are trying to do and you look at really their weaknesses, again, let's not be so blind to next year. And I'm not just talking about us there. I'm talking about everybody as a whole. And so really what the Dolphins might be targeting. Let's take a few minutes to look at what their weaknesses were, look at what they may want to do better, read their press conferences, because while most of the stuff that coaches say are not true, sometimes they leave hints in there for us to pick up, and that's absolutely what happened if you go back and read transcripts from the previous year. Going into the fourth-round pick, who we talked about, but they had two fourth-round picks, Durham Smythe, number 123 overall, and then again, at the end of the fourth round, Kalen Ballage from running back Arizona State. We touched on Smythe already in terms of talking about him and Mike Gesicki together, and he will be the yin and the yang to Gesicki. They'll be that together. But Kalen Ballage is another guy that really intrigues me. Okay, so Kalen Ballage, when he was picked, I had him ranked number 157 overall, picked the number 131, so that's pretty good there. Position ranked number 14 from Arizona State. The Dolphins' one ladder on Ballage was this, is a big linear athlete that has good size and is a very good athlete, can be a mismatch as a route runner in the pass game, and good straight line speed and vision, is a good kid and is very smart, needs to develop more consistency as a player. Now, Ballage at one point tied the FBS record for 8 touchdowns in a single game, running, receiving, and actually as a direct snap. After that game, he did not take credit for any of it. He gave credit to his offensive linemen. He gave credit to his coaches. He gave credit to God, and he gave credit to all those around him who helped him achieve this. The anti-Jay Ajayi, and I tweeted this out too, is when Jay Ajayi, when he scored a touchdown or didn't even get enough touches, he would complain, he would mope, he would sulk. And that's what led the Dolphins to trading him to the Philadelphia Eagles. But Kalen Ballage is a good guy out of the backfield who can catch the ball. He's going to be, you know, kind of that power back where he can run people over a little bit. And he's going to be that nice complement to Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore. Again, not a guy who's going to come out day one and contribute in terms of the total offense, but a guy who I think if push came to shove, Sutton and Houts, he can get the job done. Sutton, we'll start with you on him.
Well, when we're reflecting on some of the articles that were in that Yahoo series, one of the key core attributes that this Dolphins team's looking for is work ethic. And I think this is one of the guys that really embody that. And not to mention, getting a running back in the fourth round is just, that seems to be the wheelhouse of picking up and getting good value in running backs in the NFL draft. So I think we kind of double dip there in some sense. He's going to be able to learn behind Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore. I mean, what a great person to learn from Frank Gore, how to just take care of your body and approach the mental side of the game. So to see those things unfold for him, I think Kalen's got to be feeling pretty good about his situation. He's going to be good depth. Like you said, he's not going to be expected to come in and do a whole lot, but I think he could very easily serve as a Damian Williams type of role. He could come in and like the one-liner said, can create some mismatches on the outside. And I was pleasantly surprised once Kenyon Drake came into the fold last year after we shipped Ajayi to the Eagles, you saw a little bit more of the running backs getting split out wide and creating mismatches on the linebackers. I feel like I haven't seen those types of wrinkles in the Dolphins offense as much as I'd like to see. So to have a guy like Kalen be able to come in and create some more mismatches for us maybe on third down, but maybe in obvious passing situations, or maybe we're able to weave him into some sub packages. But at any rate, he was a playmaker for that team, and by all accounts, a great football character guy.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that pick. I mean, he's a guy that, like you both said, he's going to be the perfect complement to Kenyon Drake. I'm not sure what his role will be as a rookie. We know how Adam Gase is with his rookies, specifically at running back. I mean, this guy, he might see some work on returns, punt returns, kick returns, things like that. But, I mean, when you put on the tape the Wildcat, I mean, the last time that this team won the AFC East, the Wildcat offense was a thing. So, I mean, to see him on tape score 8 touchdowns, it was a thing of beauty. I know he ran a 4.46. And whether or not it's this season or next, I mean, I think Kalen Ballage, he's going to be the perfect complement to Kenyon Drake, and I'm excited to see what he can do in Adam Gase's offense moving forward.
All right, so we'll see how that shakes out. But moving on to the rest of the draft, Dolphins did not have a fifth-round pick. They traded that one for Robert Quinn to the Los Angeles Rams. Then they move into the sixth round, and they pick up Cornell Armstrong, defensive back from Southern Miss. And then they moved in to the seventh round, picked up Quentin Poling, linebacker from Ohio, and then Jason Sanders, kicker from New Mexico. Let's touch on those three as a group, boys. Cornell Armstrong, a guy there that's the Dolphins' one-liner, according to this, is a perimeter corner that has good short area quickness, better in press coverage than off coverage, needs to be more consistent with his awareness in zone from off coverage, good ball skills when he is in position, but needs to be more consistent as a tackler, needs to develop a role for himself on special teams, is smart and tough. Quentin Poling, athletic linebacker that has outstanding instincts, but just average size to take on and shed blocks. Inconsistent at times coming to balance and tackling in space, but will be an outstanding special teams player, is smart and tough, and most importantly, loves football. Kicker Jason Sanders, very strong leg with good range from 50-plus, exceptional deep kickoff player with high touchback percentage, limited opportunities on field goals. So for me, you know, you look at Poling and Armstrong, and those guys need to make their way on special teams. It's not going to be anything crazy with them. They're not going to be probably not starting day one unless they have a tremendous camp and surprise the hell out of everybody. They're going to have to fight to make the team. I think for me, the most interesting pick here is the seventh round pick of Jason Sanders, the kicker from New Mexico, just because out of those three players, he's going to have the biggest impact out of all of them from day one. Obviously, he's going to have to battle in training camp against other guys that Dolphins bring in. But Jason Sanders right now, he's the draft pick. He has the edge. Dolphins are going to give him every opportunity to win the job. He has a tremendous, powerful leg. I've watched film on him since he was the pick. And he boots field goals like it's nobody's business. He had around a 70% accuracy rate his past season in college. But apparently, Darren Rizzi loves this guy. Personally worked him out. And so, you know, for me, that's the most interesting pick there. Quentin and Cornell, we'll see how you guys shake out, but you're really going to need to make your way on special teams. And I don't think it's worth getting too excited about either of them yet until we start seeing them in live action and in pads against other guys in the NFL. Outs, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, when that Cornell pick came through, I think we all kind of at least had hoped this team was going to draft a quarterback, someone who they could develop and maybe eventually become something. Didn't quite happen. Definitely think that he needs to stick on special teams. Excited to see what he can do in the secondary, but I think that's a crowded room. Quentin Poling, I mean, that's a guy who, again, needs to come out there and impress on special teams. Seems to be a decent coverage linebacker, a guy who can stuff the run, good blitzer, but again, he's a guy who, if he wants to make that 53-man roster, he needs to go out there and perform on special teams. And then the kicker, Sanders, I mean, he's a guy who, it appeared that there were I'm going to be the first to admit I don't watch kicker film, but it looked like the guy from Florida, Pinero, or whatever the hell his name was the guy that everyone kept saying is the best kicker in the country. And then when Sanders got taken, I mean, it was one of those picks that I just kind of, you know, whatever. I still think Cody Parkey should have been re-signed. I know he made a hell of a lot of money from the Chicago Bears. Good for him. But what he did last season for the Dolphins, I mean, kickers. It's a freaking kicker. So it's going to be a huge, huge fills shoes to fill for a guy like Sanders or one of those undrafted guys that come in and become competition. But we need a kicker. We need some guy that can hit you touched on 71.5% field goal percentage. I think he made 25 out of 35 field goals last year. He's got to continue to improve and do better. But if that's a guy Rizzy likes, I'm all on board.
I mean, we're going to be scoring nothing but touchdowns, so I don't know why we even need to focus on a kicker anyway. But it does seem like when we do select a kicker, we like to pick some obscure people. I don't know that Sanders was on anybody's radar, to be honest with you. And just looking back at Andrew Franks drafting him out of RPI and then drafting Sanders out of New Mexico, who I believe was like, I don't know, 15 out of 20 or 10 out of 15 or something like that on his field goals. I can't remember. But it wasn't that great. But, hey, you have to trust their evaluation of a kicking prospect. I don't know crap about that. So hopefully he's able to at least come in, win the starting gig, and kick nothing but touchbacks, and then hopefully we never have to have him kick a field goal because we're running up and down the field. But the other two guys, you'd already mentioned, it's all about special teams with those guys. And hopefully they're able to come in and provide enough competition to some of the guys ahead of them in the depth chart that they can learn some things in the meeting room and just get acclimated to the pro game. As a OU Bobcat alum, it was really nice to see Quentin Poling drafted by us. And I do think that he has it does seem like the front office was targeting linebackers that have some pass coverage skills and some movement skills. And both the linebackers that we drafted this year fit that bill. Jerome is a little bit more athletic than Quentin. So you'd like to see Quentin make his mark on special teams, like you guys said. But it does seem like Darren Rizzi had his thumbprints on the last couple rounds here, getting some quality contributors to the special teams unit.
So for me, I had the Dolphins ranked 23rd overall in the NFL draft. In terms of their picks, the average picks, and everything else that all went into my grades there. But I also said this. I knew what the Dolphins' vision was after the draft was done. Forget round 6 and forget round 7. Forget Cornell Armstrong. Forget Quentin Poling. Forget Sanders, who is a good pick and a needed pick. If you take them round 1 through round 4, I knew exactly what they're doing with Minkah. I know exactly what they're going to do with Jazicki. I know exactly what they're going to do with Jerome Baker. I know exactly what they're going to do with Durham Smythe. I know exactly what they're going to do with Kalen Ballage. And then you look at, okay, Poling, Armstrong, you're reaching the bottom of the barrel there anyways in the 6th, 7th round. And then you pick your kicker who's going to contribute hopefully on day 1. So you look at really rounds 1 through 4 and those picks there, and you're like, okay, I know what the Dolphins are doing. I can see their vision. I know exactly what's going on. So take away that 23rd grade, right? Because that's just on paper. That means absolutely nothing until they start playing games. Or that means nothing once they start playing the games, I should say. So as long as the Dolphins have a vision of what they're trying to accomplish, and I believe they did accomplish that vision, then I think there's really nothing else that you could say. The one thing I will say is they probably wanted Fred Warner there where they took Jerome Baker, but he was selected a few spots before by the 49ers. But Minkah was one of their top targets, if not their top target. Jazicki, clearly their top target. Maybe Hayden Hurst, but probably Jazicki more so. Jerome Baker, we're not sure about. Durham Smythe, obviously the opposite of Jazicki, has to compliment him. That was probably a priority target. And then Kalen Ballage there, who by all accounts from the Yahoo article was a priority target for the Dolphins. So you look at those guys and you're like, all right, we get it. We get it, right? And, you know, kudos to the Dolphins. I thought they had a tremendous draft there. I thought they were very patient. They were very smart and not trying to trade up all over the place for different guys. And it's Adam Gase and Chris Greer running the show. Tannenbaum is in the background managing the cap, overseeing football operations. But when it comes to player acquisition and all that kind of stuff, it is clearly Chris Greer and Adam Gase. Any last thoughts on the draft before we wrap the show with undrafted free agents, Houts?
Yeah, man. 23rd, I know that's going off of paper, but that seems crazy. I mean, the Dolphins draft that you touched on, those first 4 picks were absolutely insane. Minkah Fitzpatrick, top 5, if not top 10 player. And then you got a guy like Jacecki going to come in and fill an immediate role. Jerome Baker, like you said, Fred Warner was probably the pick there, but he's going to come in and have an impact. Ballage, I mean, this is one of the better drafts on paper that I've seen from the Dolphins. I mean, these last three between Chris Greer and Adam Gase, I mean, a lot of people are down on the Dolphins. A lot of the national media wants to continue to shit on them, but what they've been doing these last few drafts have been pretty damn awesome, and I'm excited to see the way they play out. I was happy with the Dolphins draft, and I'm looking forward to the 2018 season.
And Matthew, I know you're trying to keep us humble, and you know maybe we missed some signs along the way, but one thing that we did predict and we're pretty adamant about was that the Dolphins needed to address tight end in the second round. We may have missed on the specific player that they were looking at, but we knew that if you didn't get a tight end in the second round and you're getting into the third and fourth rounds, you weren't getting the same caliber of player, and that affected the offensive kind of big picture. So to be able to get a tight end like Gesicki and have us kind of channel in on needing that position in that particular round, got to give us props for that, right?
Absolutely. And I think we also need to give ourselves props for nailing their plan, because we said leading up to the draft, here was the Dolphins' plan. Linebacker or safety in round one, tight end in round two, quarterback or running back in round three, which ended up going linebacker because they didn't get their linebacker in round one. And round four, they were going best player available and looking at defensive tackle, which they didn't get. But in terms of linebacker, safety in round one, you look at those two, you encompass that with the tight end and then the running back. So we had linebacker, safety, running back, tight end in the first four selections. And sure enough, their first four selections, running back, safety, tight end, linebacker, tight end, running back. So it was all there right in front of us. We had the information leading up to the draft. If you listen to FinSider Radio, you would have known their plan. Then to see it play out the same way we called it was pretty cool to see. Defensive tackle, we just mentioned. Akeem Spence traded from the Lions for a 2019 pick, which is actually one of the picks the Dolphins had in the Jarvis Landry trade there. And he is going to, I think, be a nice little addition to the line in that rotation there. I don't know too much about him yet, but he did play along in Dominican Sue. And more importantly, the defensive line coach that is now with the Miami Dolphins, he played with him back in Detroit. By all accounts, a good player who has plenty of upside. And the Detroit Lions actually just extended his contract. Now they won't need to pay that money. And then the Dolphins also signing Bryce Petty. Camp arm, let's not get too crazy about it. Fourth quarterback on the roster. I don't think there's anything there to see. Before we just get your final thoughts, Houts and Sutton, let's go over the undrafted free agents. Notre Dame College defensive lineman Claudie Matthew, Utah State cornerback Jalen Davis, TCU long snapper Lucas Gravel, North Carolina linebacker Kaysen Collins, William & Mary offensive lineman Connor Hilland, Michigan linebacker Mike McCray, Miami defensive tackle Anthony Moten, UCF defensive tackle Jamius Pittman, Fairmont wide receiver Quincy Redmond, Purdue offensive lineman David Steinmetz, Florida Atlantic running back Buddy Howell, and FAU kicker, the FAU, Greg Joseph. We'll see how many of those make the roster. They'll all have to compete. We'll be lucky if two or three of them become 53-man roster players for the Miami Dolphins. All right, Son and Houts, any last words, and then we'll hit up the questions that have come to us on Twitter.
Yeah, just to throw this out there real quick, just a teaser for next week's episode of the draft picks that we've been talking about extensively tonight. Guess what? We're going to have one of them on the show next week.
Yes, we are. No names yet because we don't want to jinx ourselves, but we are working hard on it, and we're hoping that that is going to become a reality. All right, Houts, any last words?
Bryce Petty nearly died, and now he's a Miami Dolphin.
We almost witnessed his death together.
Yeah, we all almost.
Yeah. Three of us were there when he was almost.
We were all there.
And the truth is, he's probably not better than David Fales. So I don't know how.
Yeah, let's not get carried away with Bryce Petty here. He's not the next Dan Marino, and he's not going to be anything anyone's going to get excited about. All right, what do we have for questions, Sutton and Houts?
Okay, so. Well, we had a question from Rob Carew. About the undrafted free agent that we thought was most likely to stick on the roster. Do you guys have any predictions?
Oh, shit.
I think the kicker, because who knows kicker what's going to happen with the kickers. I think the kicker, Greg like Joseph from the FAU. I would say maybe... David Steinmetz, the tackle, from Purdue just because with Asiata, we don't know what's going to happen with him. I don't know. It's hard to say with undrafted free agents. It's not like I'm sitting here watching film on all of them.
Yeah, and it also seems like it's always a random undrafted free agent. There's always kind of a cult favorite going into training camp, and it's the opposite of that person that makes the roster for whatever reason. Like when Neville Hewitt made it a couple years ago, we were like, he may have been like the fifth or sixth choice out of the group that we had. So when you look at this cohort, it's kind of hard to see who's going to make the roster, but maybe Jamias or Jamias Pittman, that seems to be one of the favorites at this point in terms of stuff I've seen from CK. And then you got Michael McCray, maybe at middle linebacker from Michigan, just because he's another maybe two down run stuffer that could replace Kiko if he gets hurt or something like that. You know, it's kind of hard to tell how it's going to play out over time, especially with undrafted free agents for sure.
I think you just nailed the two guys I was getting ready to say. Buddy Howe, the running back from Florida Atlantic, might be another name. Kaysen Collins, the linebacker from North Carolina. But at the end of the day, I mean, none of us know. It all depends on how these guys go out there and perform with shorts on. So it'll be interesting to see. But Jamias Pittman and Mike McCray, those seem to be the two big names that continue to
We have one question from the Finsider Radio mailbag, and you had touched on it a little bit, MC Money, but it's about the Dolphins and staying put in some of the earlier rounds and not taking advantage of the fact that maybe they were able to trade down. And this is Esty from thefinsider.com, SD1943. And basically what he's asking is, why are we not as adept as the Patriots at moving down in the draft, accumulating more draft picks, getting more darts at the dartboard, and being able to hit on some guys? So, in other words, having 10, 11 draft picks instead of 7 or 8, and just having more opportunities to strike gold. So why are we not taking advantage of that? Do you guys have any theories?
Mine's simple. I mean, Patriots, they're continuously picking at the, bottom five of the draft. And, I mean, I'd argue that the Dolphins struck gold with Minkah Fitzpatrick. So, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with that range of you got elite talent in those top 10, 15 picks now when you see all these the run-on quarterbacks. So you see these top maybe 5 or 10 players fall there to those mid-teens. And then after that, it's just this flood of players who, you know, they're all – very good players, but very similar in talent level. So, I mean, you see New England, they just continue to move down. I think they're loading up for something huge next year. I mean, we always touch on the quarterbacks. I think Tom Brady's successor is going to be drafted next season. So, I mean, I'm not upset that the team didn't trade back this year. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick was the perfect pick, and I think that's what it all comes down to, though. You see New England picking bottom five. You see Miami picking top 15. The difference in talent's huge, and Miami really can't afford a trade back, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part, Hal. I guess, generally speaking, I am a trade-down kind of guy, but like you said, we're talking about people trading down from in the late 20s and early 30s. I mean, we're not talking about moving down from 11, you know, to 17 or 18 or whatever the expected trade was. So there's risk in moving down too, and how many players you're going to skim over. And when you looked at the players on the board and at the offers that they may or may not have had, and the Dolphins stayed put and pulled the trigger, I think you have to respect that, because at the same time, trading down is, you know, as many darts that you have is you're more likely to hit the bullseye. But at the same time, draft order, from the research I've seen, draft order is the only thing that dictates how good a player is going to be. It's the only factor that we have that kind of correlates with pick success. And we all know how volatile it is at each respective draft spot. So that's a long-winded way of saying that the draft is a lot of luck in terms of who you're able to hit on. And if you're able to trade down and get good value for it in hindsight, yeah, that's great. But in this particular draft, for this particular team, at this particular time, it was better to stay and pick Minka and Mike Gesicki and Jerome Baker and Kalen Ballage and see how this all plays out.
125%. I absolutely agree with all of you and everything that you said. Again, tremendous draft for the Dolphins in terms of looking at them and their vision and understanding what exactly they were trying to do. Mission accomplished for sure. Going back to that Yahoo article, if you have not read it, Google it, type in Yahoo, Miami Dolphins, scouting department, read a 9-part series. It's not long at all. It will take you 30, 45 minutes to read. Tremendous, tremendous insight into the Dolphins scouting department. We can spend an entire show on it, but we're coming up on the end here. So please do read it when you get a chance. All right. Anything else, boys?
Love you. Dolphins.
All right. That's going to do it for us this week on Finsider Radio. We thank you for listening. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter. I am at Cannata NFL, CannataNFL. Sutton is at Sutton Laces Out, and Houts is at Houts, HOUTZ. Follow us for great insight throughout the week, each and every day. For Houts MD and Sutton the Creeper Soccer Dad, I am MC Money. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.
We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, because we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins number one. The greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, 'cause we're the